702. Email your CBS at 702.co.za.
One of the toughest things to do in a situation where we are all panic-stricken and the stakes are high is to stay out of debate because we all have a legitimate interest in it. But the question is, as lay people, when should we express an opinion and when should we take a backseat? That is a question that critical thinking lecturer Jacques Rousseau gives a lot of thinking to in his career and in his work. And I spoke to him yesterday in a detailed conversation around the relationship between experts and lay people.
Eusebius on 31702.
Okay, joining me is regular on the show and good friend of the show, Jacques Rousseau, who of course is a well-known South African critical thinking lecturer and writer and commentator on questions of science and discourse, and who himself has an excellent podcast and a blog worth following. Jacques, thanks so much for joining me to chat about discourse again. And this is right up your alley because ordinarily you are committed to improving the quality of debate in this country, but beyond that, also scientific reasoning. So thanks again for popping in.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to be with you, Eusebius.
There's so much we can get through. I'm going to segment the conversation by just popping up two or three questions that have been on my mind that I wanted your help on for the public to chew on. The question of who's allowed to speak, who's allowed to have an opinion. Science is arguably not ideology-free, or depending on which parts of science we're referring to. When can Joe Soap legitimately express a view on Twitter and Facebook, and when should they shut up?
Also, as a grounding kind of principle, which I think you and I in our respective roles would both support, we don't want to discourage people from engaging in matters of serious public interest. I mean, Our default position would be to maximize participation rather than minimize it. However, The issue you're raising does complicate that in the sense that where we are dealing with matters of grave concern like we are now with COVID-19, we don't want noise to overwhelm sound information and argument and debate and so forth. So something I've said before to you or on your show, the main thing here is that people should understand that they have a personal responsibility. I don't mean the one about not spreading the virus, but the one about not spreading viruses of kind of untruth and confusion and obfuscation and so forth. So if you're just expressing a view, you should be aware that your view is going to potentially influence other people's views and encourage false beliefs or confusion or panic where it's not warranted. So that's the first thing I'd want to say is that If you don't actually have anything useful and evidence-led driven to say, then you should seriously consider staying out of it. Mm-hmm. But if you do want to speak, I think it is your obligation to do so with an epistemic humility, with an awareness that you are not an expert and that you should couch your contributions in a way that they don't come across as pretending an authority that you don't actually have.
What happens with an old chestnut that I know you've given much thought to? You and I have spoken about it possibly on the show, but we've definitely spoken about it offline as well. What happens when the experts are searching for an answer and there's no scientific orthodoxy, and experts that you equally admire reasonably disagree? Because that is the situation with COVID-19. In that context, should a layperson be even more disinclined to jump into the conversation, or does it give them greater entitlement to say, well, things are murky even between my faves within the scientific community. Let me use my expertise as a philosopher, anthropologist, journalist, economist to tell you what I think, and maybe I might even have a brainwave for the scientists that may be useful because they are so inside their own discipline that perhaps if they listen to me, they may also make some progress between themselves.
Yeah, I mean, so as you'd be well aware, you've raised an endless number of potential sub-themes in that question. And the main thing I want to say in response to that is that, I mean, I don't know if you've read or if listeners have read Julian Bajini's last book, A Short History of Truth. And
no,
one
I
of
haven't.
The things...
Sure.
It's really worth reading. So he points out, he talks about some threats to scientific consensus and knowledge and so forth. And one of them is this kind of people speak about it as if it's more widespread than it is, but this idea of kind of postmodernism or relativism, that sort of thing, that dissent amongst the scientific community or amongst experts no longer results in people saying, my gosh, that is so complicated, and this indirect answer to your question, it's so complicated that therefore there is even less of a reason for me to intervene. Instead, what people are now concluding is, my God, it's so complicated, therefore I'm just as qualified as they are to jump in, right? So that's the absurd situation that we're in. People use the dissent and debate amongst the scientific authorities as a reason to just confirm their own preferences. So I want to go out and exercise. Yeah. So if I want to go out and exercise, oh, look, they can't agree. Therefore, this is a legitimate position to hold, you know. But if you look at the kind of sub-thread of the dissent and the debate, so even people who think that the lockdown should end immediately, of which there are many and many sensible people, even amongst those, they're still saying that does not hold true for people who are immunocompromised or the elderly. And even for those of us who are not immunocompromised or elderly, we still would need to be reasonably paranoid about the kinds of engagements we have with others outside. So it's not as if there's a binary like the world.
How do we reconcile your sensitivity to the engaged citizen that has a legitimate stake in a public policy debate where experts are having a dialectic with the humility that I must have, even in the scenario where the experts are busy slugging it out reasonably between themselves? Let's take a real example. Should my kid go back to school or not? It's so interesting. You can find a scientist to prop up your viewpoint as a journalist, as a researcher, in your WhatsApp group around the bride, because for every position possible, there's a scientist that holds the view. Yeah, let the kids out, let them go on a drive with daddy to the shop, let them go to school. And there, I wonder, what is the implication for the layperson? Should the layperson also get popcorn and sit back and watch the debate play out? Or as a mom, as a dad, as a sibling, as a mentor, as someone who's looking after kids, am I allowed to enter into that debate?
Yeah, I think you are, in the sense that the kind of sociological data from your life and everybody else's life who's struggling with the demands of maintaining jobs and feeding families and homeschooling kids and so forth, that those concerns all have to feed into the conversation. So you can make your concerns explicit, and an awareness of how people are struggling with those sorts of issues does have to feed into policy decisions. And I mean, I'm aware, as I think you'd know, that this luxury of abstracting isn't available to everybody. I don't have kids, I don't have this problem. Yeah. But I would say, insofar as it is possible, one would do a kind of cost-benefit analysis here. And if you are able to, for example, continue homeschooling, and leaving aside the problem of whether you should carry on paying school fees or not, and if you are able to do so, I think a cost-benefit analysis would say that you should rather not send your kids to school until there's a consensus that it's safe to do so. Mm. But many people will not have that option, unfortunately.
I want to move conversation to two other themes before we end. The first is a general question around science and ideology. And also a question of public trust. It's a little bit messy, but just hear me out and then respond to each thread in the complex of the question. Is science ideology free, or must scientists also in turn have some humility and not condescend to the public? I've seen some scientists, not all of them, but some of them advising government privately and elsewhere, saying, oh, the media's got an agenda, or I wish lay people would just stop it. You know, if stop saying I'm not a doctor, but. So speak to me just around, in terms of philosophy of science and the politics of science, what it is that scientists themselves must also in turn show humility in respect of, in terms of how science fits into society. And then a separate issue, maybe it's a distinct question altogether. What happens to public trust if government says at the beginning of the lockdown, our regulations are informed by science And then 6-7 weeks later, some scientists break rank and they say, not so quick, Mr. Politician. Actually, I have secretly been horrified that you have pretended that it is in my name that you do everything.
So science, of course, as a body of knowledge or as a methodology of inquiring about the world and its nature, one could perhaps say that that is ideology-free or value-free, but that doesn't mean that scientists themselves and what they choose to focus on and their funding sources and all that stuff is value-free. So I think there certainly is going to be a lot of ideological influence and in terms of what people say and do, but the structural thing that people, that some people, at least in the chattering classes on social media, don't get here, is that nobody, at least nobody I can think of right offhand, is malicious here. Mm. The contestation, I mean, so I'm privy to some of the background information about what's going on at the Department of Health and NICD and so forth. And these contesting viewpoints are all motivated by exactly the same thing, which is striking an incredibly delicate balance between public health and economic catastrophe.
Yeah.
And there is no right answer. And that's the key thing I'd want people to try to remember, is that you're going to get lambasted for whatever choice you make. Mm. And everybody is, I think, trying to argue for what they think is, on aggregate, the thing that's going to result in the least lives lost and jobs lost and so forth.
Mm. And then in relation to public trust, that for me is quite interesting, because I think part of the reason why President Cyril Ramaphosa and his council looking into this, the substructure drawn from cabinet, initially got high levels of support is in part because people took for granted that there's robust science behind the decisions. Now that we see contestation, even if it's not malicious, between the scientists, it's kind of interesting to observe from a sociological point of view, even if it's anecdotal at this stage, how public sentiment shifts once it is no longer clear who exactly government is listening to, in fact.
Yeah, that's true, but it also points to a difference between easier and more difficult sorts of decisions. So the one thing, as you've highlighted, the one thing is that patients will decrease over time. They'll be buy-in for a while, and then it might decrease. But the decision to take an immediate hard lockdown was the subject of a much greater consensus than the decision to perpetuate it after X number of weeks. So of course, you're going to start hearing more dissenting voices then, and we can have our views, but that doesn't license a distrust in whatever the consensus view is. Unless we've got some evidence that people are being actively ignored or shut out of the conversation, or that the actual consensus viewpoint is being drowned out by political interests or so forth, we don't actually have a reason to argue for any kind of civil revolt or some such as some in the Western Cape seems to be arguing.
Yeah, a final question for today, Jacques, and you've touched on it in detail implicitly, but I want to make the question explicit. And perhaps this can be a bigger conversation between you, me, and our listeners in future. What happens to what do we do with uncertainty from an epistemological point of view? We like certainty, particularly around a pandemic when we're all very scared for good reason, for ourselves, for our children, for neighbors, for relatives and friends that may have comorbidities. And yet the one thing that's very clear in the year 2020 is that there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of under, you know, sort of justified intuitions that people are running with. As a philosopher, what would be your advice to the public in terms of what attitude people need to adopt in the absence of certainty?
So I think it's clear right now that none of us can really have any idea when we're going to be able to emerge into a world, nor what kind of world that's going to be, right? So the reason I stress this is because that, I think, is undeniably quite crippling to us psychologically. And one thing I'd want to say, not as a philosopher, just as a human being, people should acknowledge the enormous mental and emotional strain that puts us all under. And what we do in response to that, the an illusion of certainty or an illusion of avoiding the ambiguity or defeating it is comforting, feels comforting to us. So we're going to be inclined to reach for some sort of easy or comforting or at least dogmatic answer for some people. But the psychological drivers of that do not mean that it's epistemically warranted or justified. So what we should do here is, I think, just admit to ourselves that A, we're not experts. B, even the experts don't quite know exactly what's going on. And we are all, in a sense, victims of a process we have no control over. And I mean, I happen to be quite stoic about these things. And as I said earlier on, I have certain luxuries in being able to do so. But insofar as it's possible, that is the most justified viewpoint here, is that you actually don't have any justification for reaching firm conclusions here. It's not your fault. And it's really unfortunate, but that's the situation that we are all in.
And that's exactly why I've always told you you should be an agnostic. Jacques, thanks for coming on the show again.
Thanks, Eusebius.